is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The very first question asked inside the South Carolina Supreme Court the other morning in the Alec Murdaugh hearing really kind of told you everything you needed to know about where this case is headed. Justice George James looked at the attorneys, and before anyone could settle into their prepared remarks, he asked a simple question. Can we consider the affidavit of the egg juror? That's the juror dismissed right before deliberations, who former Chief Justice Jean Toll refused to let testify at the January 24 evidentiary hearing. The juror whose account of what Becky Hill said to the jury panel was apparently too inconvenient to put on record. And now, nearly 2 years later, the highest court in the state wants to know why. Dick Harpudelin's response was almost understated. I don't know. He told the justices, I'm not sure she stated a coherent reason. That answer hung in the room, because if the Supreme Court of South Carolina is opening its hearing by asking why a key witness was excluded from the proceeding that was supposed to determine whether there was jury tampering, it's not a court looking to rubber stamp a conviction. That's a court looking for answers. We're going to get into all of this and what took place at the Alec Murdaugh hearing and where it may lead next. To Alec Murdaugh, the sequel trial. Could we get there? Let's get into it. Give me your thoughts in the comment section as we do. Over on Substack, the link's in the description, hiddenkillers.substack.com. Join our community there. It's absolutely free, no paywall. Get our reporting a day in advance and access to all of their videos a day before everybody else. And on YouTube, too. You can weigh in there on the comment section. We read it all. We'd love to get your thoughts on where you think this is all going. All right, let me set the table here, because this was not a retrial. There were no witnesses, no new evidence introduced, and no verdicts issued. Alec Murdaugh wasn't even in the courtroom. Only lawyers, his defense team, Harpudelin, Jim Griffin, and Philip Barber argued two separate tracks. The first was the jury tampering issue and Justice Toll's denial of the new trial. The second was a series of evidentiary errors that they say happened during the original 2023 trial, most notably the massive volume of financial crimes testimony that the jury heard. On the other side, Senior Assistant Deputy Attorney General Creighton Waters made the state's case, with Attorney General Alan Wilson, who's currently running for governor, because of course he is, seated right beside him at the council table. Each side got 40 minutes, split across two issues, with 10 minutes of rebuttal time reserved for the defense. So then, of course, the physical challenge, where they have to go through an obstacle course, collect the flags, and eventually end up in a bucket of slime dumping on one's head. And if you can get the flag in time, Alec gets a new trial. It's hosted by Mark Summers, and you can watch the replay on Nickelodeon this Thursday night at 7 p.m. I'm kidding. But it's like you do this, you do that, or the physical challenge. Fans of Double Dare know what I'm talking about. The Supreme Court doesn't rule from the bench. They will deliberate privately and have roughly 60 days from the close of the February session to issue a written opinion. So we may not have a decision until late April. But what happened in that courtroom gave us more than enough to talk about right now. The first phase of the hearing focused entirely on good old Becky Hill, the former Colleton County clerk of court, who by her own admission is a convicted liar. Harpudelin framed the entire issue as a Sixth Amendment question from the jump. He told the justices that in 51 years of practicing law, he had never seen a factual pattern like this one ever. A court official with a financial motive, a book deal, who allegedly influenced jurors during the most scrutinized trial in South Carolina history. Hill pled guilty in December of 25 to perjury, obstruction of justice, and misconduct in office, all connected to her conduct during and after the Murdaugh trial. And here's the part that matters. Those guilty pleas don't exist when Toll ruled in January of 24 that Murdaugh was not entitled to a new trial. They do exist now. The Supreme Court allowed the defense to supplement the appellate record with Hill's indictment and guilty plea documents. So for the first time, the justices are evaluating the jury tampering claims with the full picture of who Becky Hill actually is. And the justices went right at that tension. They zeroed in on the paradox sitting at the center of Toll's ruling. They found Hill not completely credible. Her exact words, and yet she still rejected the broader allegations of jury tampering as unproven. Justice John Few asked Creighton Waters directly how you can characterize someone as not completely credible when her own criminal conviction proves she committed perjury. How do you thread that needle? Waters didn't really have a clean answer. Chief Justice Gary Kittredge piled on, pointing out that the testimony of Barnwell Clerk of Court Rhonda McElhavan, who described Hill's comments during the trial, mirrored what the jurors themselves reported. Kittredge called the similarities striking, and then he dropped a real bomb. He told Waters that Toll's order didn't even mention one of the most damning allegations from Juror Z, that Hill told jurors, "Don't be fooled by Alex's testimony." I don't know why I made her sound like that, but I did. Kittredge said plainly that if you credit that statement, everything else Hill reportedly said to jurors stops looking like casual chit-chat and starts looking a lot more nefarious. One of the justices delivered what might be the single most quoted line of the day. He reminded Waters that the clerk of court in any courthouse is the first and last point of contact for jurors, that there's a natural bond of trust and respect that develops between jurors and the people who manage their experience. And he said it. Justice is supposed to be blind, but court officials are supposed to be mute. Waters tried to push back, arguing that Hill wasn't really the juror's primary contact, that it was bailiff Bill Polk, but the justices weren't buying that deflection. Justice James returned repeatedly to the egg juror, the one Toll wouldn't let testify, asking Waters why her affidavit shouldn't be part of the appellate record. Justice Kittredge pressed on how you can selectively believe Hill on some things while discrediting her on others. Waters kept falling back on Toll's characterization that Hill's comments were foolish and fleeting and that Judge Newman's curative instructions to the jury were sufficient. But the justices didn't seem to think foolish and fleeting covers what they were reading in the record. And here's a legal question that could decide the whole thing. The defense argues that Toll applied the wrong standard. She asked whether Hill's comments change the verdict, an outcome-based test. The defense says the correct standard is whether Hill's conduct compromised the constitutional right to an impartial jury. That's a structural question. It doesn't ask whether Alec Murdaugh would have been acquitted without Hill's interference. It asks whether the process itself was contaminated. Under federal precedent like Remmer v. United States, once you show improper contact with jurors, prejudice is presumed, and the burden shifts to the state to prove it was harmless. If the Supreme Court agrees that Toll used the wrong framework, the entire new trial could collapse, regardless of how strong the state thinks the evidence is. Then they went on a break. And after the break, the court shifted to the evidentiary issues from 2023. And the trial. And this is where things got sharp in a different way. Jim Griffin outlined five categories of alleged error: the admission of extensive financial crimes testimony, disputes over cell phone data, and an in-trial experiment, remember this, involving an iPhone's Raise to Wake feature, gunshot residue evidence from a blue raincoat found at Murdaugh's mother's house that was never directly connected to Murdaugh, alleged improper use of Murdaugh's post-Miranda silence, and firearms identification testimony the defense called unreliable. Griffin made a point that's easy to forget in the noise of this case. This was a circumstantial evidence case. There were no eyewitnesses. The murder weapons were never recovered. Crime scene experts testified that a close-range shotgun blast would likely leave blood and brain matter on the shooter, and none of that was found on Murdaugh, his clothing, his vehicle, or inside his home. The cell phone and GPS data, Griffin argued, pointed to his innocence, not his guilt. But the financial crimes evidence is where the justices really bore down. Chief Justice Kittredge told Waters something that should worry the state considerably. He said South Carolina's version of Rule 404B, the rule governing whether you can introduce evidence of other bad acts, isn't a rule of exclusion, or is rather a rule of exclusion, not inclusion. And in this trial, Kittredge said the gate was just left open. He told Waters he couldn't find a single example of a financial crime evidence the state offered that Judge Newman excluded. Not one. Everything got in. He then pressed Waters specifically on the testimony of Tony Satterfield, asking why jurors needed to hear emotionally charged details about a disabled brother when the question before the jury was whether Alec Murdaugh murdered his wife and son. How exactly does that go to motive? Waters tried to frame the financial evidence as essential context, part of what he called a gathering storm of mounting pressures that gave Murdaugh a reason to kill. At one point, he referenced the movie Fargo to try to illustrate the desperation of Murdaugh's financial situation. Justice Few wasn't having it. "I haven't seen Fargo," Few told him. "Get to the point." I don't know if that's how he sounded or not. The exchange captured the temperature of the room perfectly. The justices weren't interested in narrative flourishes. They wanted legal justification, not a mounting storm for why a murder trial turned into a six-week seminar on Alec Murdaugh's financial crimes and whether the sheer volume of that testimony crossed the line from legitimate motive evidence into impermissible character assassination. Whether Philip Barber stood up for the defense's 10-minute rebuttal, he drove that point home. He argued that the financial evidence was deployed with a specific purpose to convince the jury that Alec Murdaugh was a person capable of anything. He pointed to the prosecution's repeated refrain throughout the trial, where witness after witness was asked some version of the same question. Do you know the real Alec Murdaugh? That's not motive evidence, that's a theme. And the theme was designed to make jurors feel that a man who could steal from his dead housekeeper's sons could certainly kill his own family. Barber also circled back to the Becky Hill issue one more time. I don't know why I did that, but I did. Arguing again that Toll applied the wrong legal standard, focusing on whether the comments changed the verdict rather than whether they compromised the right to an impartial jury. The Supreme Court took the case under advisement. No ruling yet, and none expected for weeks, possibly months. Three paths are available for the justices now. Here's the choose-your-own-adventure page-turner, if you will. Affirm the convictions, order a new trial, or remand the case to a lower court for further proceedings. Arpudelin has already said publicly that if the court affirms, federal appeals are next, and a Sixth Amendment issue front and center would be the foundation of that fight. But here's what I'll say about what we watched unfold. This did not look or feel like a court that was going through the motions. The justices asked hard questions on both sides, but the state absorbed the vast majority of the pressure. Waters was held well past his time limits, not because the justices were being generous, but because they weren't done pressing him. They challenged his characterization of Hill's conduct, the dismissal of it. They questioned the breadth of the financial evidence, and they openly wondered whether the trial court applied the correct constitutional standard. None of that guarantees a particular outcome. Appellate courts ask tough questions all the time and still affirm, but there is a difference between a court stress testing a conviction it plans to uphold and a court genuinely troubled by what it's seeing on the record. It felt a lot more like the second one. Whether Alec Murdaugh killed Maggie and Paul is the question. The jury answered nearly 3 years ago. Whether that jury was given a fair shot at answering it honestly, without a court official now convicted of perjury making improper comments to jurors, without a mountain of financial testimony designed to make them hate the defendant, that's what five justices are deciding now. And after what happened in that courtroom, the answer is far from settled. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack or YouTube. If I were a betting man, and I'm sure there's probably a bet for this out there, I'm not a betting man. But if I were, I'd be guessing we're going to see the Alec Murtaugh trial, part two. I would be very surprised if we don't. So buckle up, Buttercup. When would that happen? How long would it take place? Probably next year. They got to prep. They got to get ready. And what we would see, well, that's for anyone's guess. How would that look? Well, let the speculation begin, right? Your thoughts in the comment section, Substack, hiddenkillers.substack.com, or go to hiddenkillerspod.com. It'll take you right there to join us there. It's free. There's no paywall. Just sign up and comment away. Love to get your thoughts. You get all of our reporting a day in advance as well, and it's free. No ads. It's lovely. Just go check it out. Great community there, too, for weighing all of these cases and thoughts. Also on YouTube, the comments there, we'd love to get your thoughts. And while you're out there, if you are not already doing this, press subscribe to our podcast so you can take us with you audibly wherever you go. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you name it, we are there. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi and press subscribe. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you're finding this valuable. All right. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi. We'll continue this in the comments. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.